You are tuning in to Going Public on KRCU, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. On January 12, 2017, Bill Connor's life would never be the same. His 20-year-old daughter, Abby, died while on winter break in Cancun, and shortly after, Abby became an organ donor and saved the lives of four people. Connor is biking all the way from Madison, Wisconsin to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, to bring awareness for organ donations for Abby's Ride for Life. Connor made a stop in Cape Girardeau recently and spoke with KRCU's Lindsay Grogene. Here's the story.
My two kids were in Cancun in Mexico on their winter break, and they were there with their mother and their stepdad. They were at an exclusive resort, and so they were doing what college kids do. They were in the pool having a drink, and they were there in less than 2 hours. And somebody slipped something into my kids' drinks, and they found both of my kids face down in a chest-deep pool. So they, unfortunately, my daughter didn't make it. My son, Austin, 23 years old, he graduated from college. He got back into school and was able to finish. That's the one of the other positives out of this. But Abby, when they pulled her out, Abby was dead. So we had her on life support. We med-flighted her into Fort Lauderdale from Cancun. And so we spent the week in preserving her so they could harvest her organs, and she helped four people. Out of all of it, the positive is she was able to help somebody in need. And her heart recipient, Abby's 20, he's 20. Abby was a junior in college, he's a junior in college. I'm going to be meeting him on my route. They live outside of Baton Rouge. But I'm writing to bring awareness to organ donation, and that's the important part. One donor can help eight people live. If you donate your eyes and your tissues, you go into the hundreds. I mean, it's amazing what can be done. And I think I'm proud of Abby because she was a donor coming out of high school. We talked about it, and none of my kids or I want to be buried in a box. We want to be cremated and let me go. So when I get to Fort Lauderdale, I have Abby's ashes in the front of my bag, in the front of my bike. And so when I get there, not only to say thank you again to the staff that took care of her, but I'm going to throw her ashes into the Atlantic Ocean and let her free. So hopefully with that and this long ride, I'll be able to throw some of the grief away. But again, I'm proud of her. She was a good girl. She was a pistol. You'd want her as a friend. If you crossed any of her friends, she'd claw your eyes out. But she's just a lovely girl, and unfortunately, it's a tough thing for a parent and a tough way to see your child pass like this. But I'm proud of her. She did what she wanted to do, and the families that are lucky enough to have her organs, I can't wait to see the young man that has her heart. I can tell you that, because she's living. He's living, but Abby's living inside of him, so that'll be cool.
Will you get to feel his heartbeat and everything?
Hear it, feel it. When I called him, that was the weirdest phone call I've ever made in my life. I mean, obviously, it's like, I can't wait to talk to him, but as soon as the phone rang and I said, hello, Jack, this is Abby Connor's dad, how you doing? And he goes, I'm fine, sir. And then we didn't talk for 5 minutes. We cried for 5 minutes. Neither of us could hold it together. We had a conversation, and then his mom, she got on the phone, and of course she starts crying. And you know, and they're thanking me for Abby, and I'm thanking them for Jack because Abby's alive inside of him. Nice kid. It's a healing part of the process. It's not going to be easy. I'm probably right around 650 miles right now. There's a lot of good days and other days that I wish I was in bed, but it's a lot of time to think, and a lot of times, you know, along the way I'm talking to Abby anyway, so she's keeping me company, and she's keeping an eye on me anyway, so.
Do you have any landmarks that you're going to be passing through, or?
Well, from Girardeau, I'm going to be going to, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Golconda, Illinois. And then from there, I go to Grand Rivers, Kentucky. From Grand Rivers, Kentucky to Dover, Tennessee. Dover, Tennessee to Hickman County, Tennessee. And then to Collinwood, Tennessee. Then I hit Mississippi. There's not a lot of anything in Mississippi. So I'm reaching out to people in these towns. I'm going from the northwest side all the way through Mississippi to the southeast corner. I've got friends and other people trying to find people that will take me in, because people have been taking me in for a night. Complete strangers, a meal, a bed, and a shower. It's been pretty amazing, the trip itself. The people coming out of the woodwork. There's a lot of good people out here. There's been cars and trucks that pull over, and I'm thinking, uh-oh. And then they're stopping because they've heard the story. They see my sign, and then they're handing me money to help fund the cause. A couple, they were working in the back of the church. I was sitting up on the front porch cooling off, and I went back and asked them if I could use the bathroom. And then we had a general conversation, of course. Then they found out. They wanted to know where I was going next, and they called ahead and bought a room for me in a hotel, complete strangers. It's been amazing. I'm originally from Madison, Wisconsin. I left there a week ago last Monday. I've been on the road. It'll be 2 weeks and Monday. So I ride 6 days out of seven, and then I'm trying to average around 60 to 65 miles a day. I've ridden more hills in the last 10 days than I have in the last 4 years of riding. And if that keeps up, the further I get down south, obviously things will start to flatten out, and then the mileage can pick up. You know, a lot of people thought I was nuts doing it, but it was a simple thing. I just thought it's something that Abby'd want me to do.
And you needed something to kind of get your mind off of it too, I bet.
Needed some space. Everybody means well, but you get into this vacuum and it's just everything around you is tied to it. I was waiting for my son to graduate from college for me to take off, or I would have taken off earlier. It's kind of funny, you're in a capsule because you pop into this town and sitting here in the room all day and then go to get something to eat, and then bam, I'm in another town. For me, it's hard to remember what I did 2 days ago. So I'm hoping, my calculations, I'll be in Fort Lauderdale on July 10th if weather, Mother Nature, my body, and my bike cooperate.
Yeah, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm 57, yeah. Yeah, this kind of stuff will keep you young. I hope it keeps me young to get down there. But we're going to be at the shoreline celebrating Abby and her organ donation. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Nice. I bike myself, and something I've heard from a lot of people I've met doing that is I want to go cross country and ride my bike. It's kind of interesting for you to go from the top of the country down to Florida. Is it just so you'll go straight to Fort Lauderdale, just to where she was, or is it because it's the easiest route?
Well, my original plan was to go to the West Coast from Madison. The tissue organization in Madison called me and asked me if I would be willing to go to the hospital that took care of my daughter, which was a no-brainer. So that's why I'm going to Florida. The hospital and the doctors to reunite, and then they've got a tree of life down there, and we're going to put Abby up on their tree. We did the same thing when I left Madison. We took Abby and we hung her on the tree of life because she donated. We're going to finish the ride with that.
You said you've been biking for 4 years.
Maybe five. It's always been therapeutic for me. I've always wanted to do something like this. There's a buddy of mine back home. I haven't seen him forever. And the weird thing is I met him at a party. He retired and he traveled from the West Coast to the East Coast. He's not a biker. And I, of course, looked at him and said, "You did what?" And I'm a biker. And I said, "I got to do that someday." The sad thing is, this is the event that has caused me to do it. Mike was going to give me all the information, the ride from Madison to the West Coast, because he's done it before. I was just going to go backwards. So when this tragedy happened, I went to the Dane County Airport in Madison. I haven't been there since 1978. I haven't been there since my senior year. I go to the airport to fly to Florida to be with my daughter. Guess who's standing in front of me in line? Mike, my buddy, that has all the information that I need to do what I need to do on my ride. And so with him standing there and I haven't been there, I mean, it's just a sign that this is what I needed to do.
Yeah.
You
know, death does change a lot of people. The event of death does change a person's point of views, kind of energy as well. And I know this is kind of early in your grieving process, but have you changed as a person or as a dad? One of your kids unfortunately died and one of them did live. So have you kind of changed as a dad and just as a person?
Well, I think anybody that loses a child is going to change. To answer the question, I think you'd probably have to ask my son. You know, I always told my kids, no matter where they went, you know, don't go anywhere alone and don't take a drink from a stranger. I don't care how cute they think you are. There's always people in the room somewhere that are there for the wrong reason. I've always been protective of my daughter. I think most fathers are. But with this tragedy, if you allow it to take you over, it'll eat you alive. And I think you've got to focus on the positive out of it, helping people in need. We've got a lawyer in Mexico. I'm not really hopeful. That money in suing them to kill my daughter like that, what's important is people can't forget about my daughter. And that would be a foundation that we would use it for. and carry your name on. But, you know, you got to move forward. You can't, well, you can worry about it, but there's nothing you can do about it.
All right. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Be a donor. It's painless. If you do it, make sure you tell somebody about it. I'll tell you, if there's a tragedy in your family and you're able to help somebody else live as a father, and it's 4 months out from what I've experienced, it'll take some of the sting out of it. You'll realize that somebody else is living because of you or a family member. The amount of people that I've talked to that were organ donors, organ recipients, the stories about how their loved one lived another 10 or 12 years. And these are strangers, and it's just a part of the emotion in it. You can help somebody live and live a better life. But I wish you all could have known my daughter, because you would have liked her. Everybody did. We're huggers, and so everybody that I meet around the route, being able to hug everybody that's trying to help us. Today, a guy gave me 4 Gatorades, especially in the heat. I mean, it works. Anything works. But lastly, if you're listening to this and you have kids, please hug your kids for me. Hug your kids for Abby and I. And then from that, just keep them close.
That was Bill Connor, who's biking all the way from Wisconsin to Florida, spreading awareness on organ donations while keeping his daughter's memory alive. More stories on KRCU's Going Public after the break.
I'm Ari Shapiro. If you find NPR reliable and comforting, you're not alone. If your old car is a bit less than reliable, well, you're not alone either. Donate your car to us and turn it into the programs you love.
Visit KRCU.org and click on support for all the details.
We're back with KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. When Missouri's legislative term limits were adopted more than 25 years ago, advocates contended it would bring new people and new ideas into the General Assembly. But some cite turnover in the House and Senate for making the legislature less knowledgeable and less willing to compromise. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum explores term limits' impact on Missouri's politics.
Jefferson City resident Mike Minecoth recalls how legislative term limits were sold to Missourians in 1992. By limiting lawmakers to 8 years in the House and 8 years in the Senate, Missouri's legislature would become more responsive to the people and less dependent on lobbyists or special interest groups. Minecoth wants to know if those predictions materialize 25 years after voters approved an initiative setting up term limits.
Well, let's look at the data that's been collected over 25 years. And go back and run the data to see, did this approach address that purpose?
Missouri is one of 15 states with term limits. Most of Missouri's neighbors, like Illinois and Kansas, allow senators and representatives to serve as long as voters will keep them. There's little dispute that Missouri's term limits ensured that lots of new people would enter the legislature every couple of years. Nearly every current member of the House or Senate started their legislative service after 2002, a big change from when lawmakers stayed in their seats for decades. But Tracy McCreary doesn't believe that's a good thing. The Olivet Democrat worked for Governor Bob Holden and as a staffer to former Democratic State Senator Joan Bray before winning election to the Missouri House. McCreary, who has spent about 4 sessions in the House, says term limits actually give lobbyists more power because they've often been around longer than representatives or senators and know more about issues. She also says term limits make it harder for lawmakers to forge close relationships.
When you start a new job anywhere, you're motivated to get to know people that you work with because you're like, you know what, this is a great company. I want to work here for a while. I want to be happy at work. And you're motivated to find out like about their family and what their hobbies are and things like that. With term limits, there's actually absolutely no motivation really to ever get to know people.
On the surface, a less social legislature may not seem like that big of a deal. But many lawmakers, including Senate President Pro Tem Ron Richard of Joplin, say term-limited senators are more inclined to filibuster bills, especially since they don't have to go before voters again. Richard, who has spent about 15 years in the legislature, says personality clashes often affect the flow of bills.
I think that's why I'm a little bit jaundiced about term limits anymore. You can't make a deal with somebody because everybody knows you're going to be gone, so people don't need to keep their word.
Efforts to significantly change term limits in general haven't gone very far. This year, lawmakers didn't pass Representative Dean Plocker's proposal that would increase from 8 to 12 years the maximum amount of time someone could spend in the legislative chamber. Plocker, a DePere Republican who has spent about two sessions in the House, still believes term limits are a good thing. But he says lawmakers may gain expertise if they're allowed to serve in a chamber for longer periods of time.
Now, I don't know what percent might serve 12 years, and certainly not everybody. But what we have now, and there are accusations that, you know, lobbyists have a greater influence on our body with term limits as they are now. And this, if that were true, would help cut back on that.
As former Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder pointed out last year, voters would have to approve any change to term limits, and it may be hard to convince Missourians to change the system.
The people grafted this onto our Constitution by a supermajority, and it's not going anywhere. I understand all the arguments against term limits, but I've seen it move some awfully capable people into public office who might not have ever had a chance.
After 2018, more than 25% of the Missouri House and the Missouri Senate will depart due to term limits. I'm Jason Rosenbaum.
In his 2018 fiscal year budget proposal, President Donald Trump wants to eliminate the Institute of Museum and Library Services, which would affect library funding and the technological services libraries provide. IMLS, a government agency, distributes funds through the Library Services and Technology Act, or LSTA, which grants money to libraries to improve technology. Cape Girardeau Public Library Director Betty Martin spoke with me more about this.
How will it affect libraries like Cape Girardeau, which is about a medium-sized library?
What it will mean for us is, you know, we have 85 computers, public access computers, in our building, and people use those to apply for jobs, pay their taxes, improve their education. And so if that money goes away, we will struggle to keep those computers updated. You know, computers have a life cycle. So after 5 to 7 years, I mean, we do the best we can. We stretch their life. But, you know, when they die, then we have to replace them. And so it'll be more of a struggle. We'll probably end up with fewer computers, I would think. You know, the training will be difficult. You know, our operating budget is based on property tax that's collected within library district. And it doesn't grow much from year to year. So, you know, that budget will just get tighter and tighter, and the things that will suffer will be computer equipment, staffing, collection development.
And so we talked a little bit about courier services and that being a one way that's going to be affected. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Also, some of the funding is used for what they call resource sharing. So this is, some people have heard it as interlibrary loan. If, you know, there's no way the Cape Girardeau Public Library can buy every book that people want, mm-hmm. Or that's published. So we often borrow items from other libraries, first around the state and then even, you know, some joining states. And the state library chose to put into their five-year plan that part of that LSTA funding would go towards a courier service. So probably as recently as 5 years ago, when people would ask for a book from another library, we would have to charge them for postage to get that book back and forth from our library to the lending library. But the state library put into their LSTA long-range plan to use some of that money for a courier service. So now we don't have to charge people for interlibrary loan. And that's huge. You know, our interlibrary loan requests have gone up quite a bit. So we're able to get whatever people want at no additional charge. I mean, people are already paying for a library card through their taxes. So this enhances our collection without having to purchase every single item that somebody wants and then house it as well.
Is there something in place in the event, again, if this goes through and the IMLS grant is eliminated, which therefore kind of hits on the LSTA grant program as well? Is there a backup plan?
Most of the medium and large size libraries are fortunate enough to have a Friends Foundation, or which is a fundraising arm. So, you know, in terms of the Cape Girardeau Public Library, we would have to get the Friends to really step up and do some additional fundraising to help replace outdated equipment, to help pay for training for staff. You know, we're fortunate that way, but I'm telling you that, you know, the majority of the libraries in Missouri are small libraries, and they don't have that kind of friends base or, you know, their community is not, they're living paycheck to paycheck. They don't have extra money to spend on fundraising to buy something for the library. I think it'll be a huge issue for those small communities, which also don't tend to have really good internet access. I think of Bollinger County, you know, really struggles to serve their people because they don't have internet access, and their library computers are used all the time.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
That was Cape Girardeau Public Library Director Betty Martin. That's our show. You can find these stories on our website at krcu.org or find us on iTunes to hear this podcast. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Join me Friday nights at 6 and Sundays at 3 for KRCU's Going Public.